Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Acts, where we've been following the angry response of Paul's ministry in the city of Ephesus. And now as we continue our study of living in the call of God, we'll be picking up in Acts chapter 19, verse 29, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
So the whole city was filled with confusion, and they rushed into the theater with one accord, having seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companions. And when Paul wanted to go in to the people, the disciples would not allow him. Then some of the officials of Asia, who were his friends, sent to him pleading that he would not venture into the theater. Now, that particular theater that they're referring to, there's still the ruins of it in Ephesus. That theater could hold about 25,000 people. So this was probably quite a riot. There was probably a very large mob of people that gathered here at this point. And so some cried one thing and some another, for the assembly was confused, and most of them did not know why they had come together. That's usually the way it is in a mob situation. You know, people don't even know what they're doing. Almost comically, Luke sort of makes note of this. Most of the people didn't know what in the world they were even doing there. It was just a crowd had gathered and they walked up and what's going on? Well, I don't know. Stick around. We'll find out, I'm sure, sooner or later. And, you know, other people would come up. And so the crowd did continue to grow. But in verse 33, it tells us, at this point, they drew Alexander out of the multitude, the Jews putting him forward. Now, here's what's going on. There's a Jewish community here. They've already pretty much rejected Paul. And now Paul is preaching against idolatry, and that's caused a problem. Now the Jews in the community, they're paranoid at this point that somehow this is going to backfire and it's going to result in them getting into trouble, getting harassed. And so this man, Alexander, evidently, he wants to make it clear that they're not supporting Paul. They're not associated with him. They're not in any way, shape, or form connected to what he's doing. So that's Alexander's motive here. He wants to disassociate himself. Interesting thing, a Jew, he wants these Gentiles to know that, hey, it's not the Jewish community that's opposing your idolatry. You know, we have nothing to do with it. It's this other guy over here. An interesting thing for the Jews who were supposed to be the great promoters of a monotheistic religion. And those who were known as being against idolatry, but yet here they're trying to disassociate themselves because I think they're wanting to protect themselves. So the Jews put him forward, and Alexander motioned with his hand, and he wanted to make his defense to the people. But when they found out that he was a Jew, all with one voice cried out for about 2 hours, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." Boy, can you imagine that? For 2 hours, they just were chanting that. Now, when the city clerk had quieted the crowd, he said, "Men of Ephesus, what man is there who does not know that the city of the Ephesians is temple guardian of the great goddess Diana? And of the image which fell down from Zeus? Therefore, since these things cannot be denied, you ought to be quiet and do nothing rashly. Now, the city clerk, of course, he would be the one who would be responsible if the Roman authorities really had to intervene and, you know, deal with this situation. They would have come back to him and said, look, why did you allow this uproar to happen in your community? So he's looking out for himself, but he, notice how he appeals to them. He says, look, what are you all upset about? Come on, everybody knows that, you know, we are the guardians of the temple of Diana, or Artemis is actually the proper reference here. And then he refers to this image that fell down from Zeus. Now, what Bible commentators generally believe to be the case here is that there must have been some sort of a meteorite or something that had landed in the area, and they took it to be Zeus sending them this image of Artemis. And so they made replicas of that and set up the temple and worship. So he's appealing to them on this level. He says, look, everybody knows that this is a fact. So what are you so upset about? He says, these things can't be denied. And now he says, for you have brought these men here who are neither robbers of temples nor blasphemers of your goddess. Therefore, if Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen have a case against anyone, the courts are open and the proconsuls are there. Let them bring the charges against one another. But if you have any other inquiry to make, it shall be determined in the lawful assembly, for we are in danger of being called into question for today's uproar, there being no reason which we may give to account for this disorderly gathering. And when he had said these things, he dismissed the assembly. Now, the city clerk was smart. He realized himself that this wasn't about, it wasn't even about Paul directly attacking the temple, or it wasn't like he was standing in Ephesus and preaching against that thing specifically. He realized that Demetrius and his craftsmen had the problem because it was an issue of their pocketbook. And so he just says, look, these men haven't blasphemed your goddess. They're not committing any sort of sacrilege toward the temple here. So just leave them alone. If Demetrius and these guys have a problem, they can go before the magistrates. They can go before the councils. And evidently that satisfied the crowd. So they dismissed the assembly. And after the uproar had ceased, Paul called the disciples to himself, embraced them, and departed to go to Macedonia. And so now Paul's ministry in Ephesus is finally winding up, and he heads back now over into the area of Macedonia and Greece. That's where Paul now headed. Now, if you look at your map, of course, you've got Ephesus would be in modern-day Turkey, the westerly coast, and then across the Aegean, back over into the area of Macedonia and Greece. That's where Paul now headed. Now, when he had gone over that region and encouraged them with many words, he came to Greece and stayed 3 months. And when the Jews plotted against him as he was about to sail to Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. And Sopater of Berea accompanied him to Asia, also Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and Tychicus and Trophimus of Asia. These men going ahead waited for us at Troas. So Paul has this team, some of them from the area of Macedonia, the others are from the other side of the Aegean, back over in that area known today as Turkey. And so verse 6 says, we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and in 5 days joined them at Troas, where we stayed 7 days. So Paul went back through, and now although Luke doesn't tell us, if we read Paul's second epistle to the Corinthians, we discover what it was that Paul was doing during this time. Paul was going around to those churches in that area, and he was taking up an offering that he was going to deliver to the poor saints in Jerusalem. You see, the church in Jerusalem had fallen upon some hard times. They were going through some difficulties, and Paul, who of course was a Jew and who loved his people and who loved Jerusalem, but was sort of seen by many of them as a renegade because of his ministry among the Gentiles, he thought this was a great opportunity to sort of endear himself and the Gentiles to the Jews by taking them some aid during their time of difficulty. And so he goes around to the churches and he collects this gift, and these men are with him, and they're going to eventually get this gift back to the church in Jerusalem. But you see, Luke doesn't give us the details. It's amazing how brief of an account of the ministry of Paul Luke really does give us. This whole book of Acts here is a very, very brief account of the events that happened in the first, 50 or 60 years of church history. Luke just singles out certain key things and concentrates on those things, but there's a ton of things that he doesn't really give us any insight on. Some of Paul's letters and some of Peter's writings as well help to sort of fill in some of the blanks, but there's still plenty that hasn't been filled in. And so they left Philippi after the time of Passover, the days of unleavened bread, and it took them 5 days to sail from Philippi across over to Troas. So it's almost sort of directly across, maybe coming a bit southeast. And so they arrive in Troas, and they stayed there 7 days. Now on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message until midnight. Now here, the seventh verse is an important verse, because this is where we see that the early church gathered for worship on the first day of the week, the day that we know as Sunday. There's a lot of concern on the part of some people about us worshiping on Sunday and sort of having denied the Sabbath day and all of that kind of thing. And quite often, people will come up and ask the question, why did you change the Sabbath from Saturday to Sunday? What right did you have to alter what God had established in changing the Sabbath? But you see, we didn't change the Sabbath. The Sabbath is still the seventh day, always has been, always will be. And the Sabbath day, of course, was an important day among the Jews. But you know, the interesting thing about the Sabbath, it wasn't necessarily a day to go to church. Although you certainly would have done something like that. But it was really a day of rest. That's what God intended with the Sabbath day. It was a day for everybody to rest. You see, the Jewish people, they worshiped God every day. There wasn't a special day, set aside where just once a week you decide you're going to take an hour out and worship God. But for the Jews, it was a daily activity. So the Sabbath was really a time of ceasing from their labor, resting. Now, when the day of Pentecost came, and when the gospel began to go out, the Christians, they began to gather together to worship on the first day of the week, because remember, the first day of the week was the day that Jesus had resurrected from the dead. So they did it primarily, no doubt, in commemoration of the resurrection. And so it became the day that the believers gathered together. Some diehard Sabbath people. They accuse the Catholic Church of forsaking the Sabbath and setting up worship on the first day of the week. But the Catholic Church didn't even come into existence until about 500 years after the apostolic period. So we're reading right here in the apostolic record in the book of Acts that it was the first day of the week that the disciples came together to break bread. So what we have established, this worship on the first day of the week, is something that we have drawn from the scriptures, not something that we've just, you know, decided to do because some church has instructed us to do it. So it was the first day of the week that they came together and they broke bread. And I think that's a reference to partaking in the communion elements. And so Paul is ready to depart the next day. So he's speaking to them and his message continued until midnight. There were many lamps in the upper room where they were gathered together. And in a window sat a certain young man named Eutychus, who was sinking into a deep sleep. He was overcome by sleep. And as Paul continued speaking, he fell down from the third story and was taken up dead. Now, I've fallen asleep in church myself. And I'm glad I've never sat in a window on the third story because I might have done the same thing. Not really a smart place to sit. Ends up dead. But Paul went down, fell on him, and embracing him said, "Do not trouble yourselves, for his life is in him." Like Elijah and Elisha, Paul throws himself on this young man who is dead. Remember, Luke is writing this. Luke is a doctor. So Luke would have told us from the medical standpoint if it was anything other than death. But Luke tells us that he was taken up as dead. And so Paul, like Elijah or Elisha of old, you remember the stories how those little children had died and they laid themselves on top of the child. And then in a process, there was a restoration. God brought life back to the children. And so here Paul throws himself on Eutychus. And I like the way Paul really doesn't draw any attention to himself. He just simply says, "Do not trouble yourselves, his life is in him." Now when he had come up, had broken bread and eaten and talked a long while, even until daybreak he departed, and they brought the young man in alive, and they were not a little comforted. So I would say so. They were greatly comforted. Then we went ahead to the ship and sailed to Assos, there intending to take Paul on board, for he had given orders intending himself to go on foot. And when we met at Assos, we took him on board and came to Mytilene. We sailed from there the next day, came opposite Chios. The following day we arrived at Samos and stayed at Trogyllium. The next day we came to Miletus. For Paul had decided to sail past Ephesus so that he would not have to spend time in Asia, for he was hurrying to be at Jerusalem if possible for the day of Pentecost. Again, just following the geography here, they pick up Paul there on the coast, and as they set sail, they stop at these islands along the way, and then they end up at Miletus. And it's here at Miletus that Paul is going to call together the elders of the church in Ephesus. And it's here that he's going to say goodbye to them. After these many years now of having ministered among them, he's going to bid them farewell. And he's pretty convinced that he's never going to see them again. And it's a very touching encounter that we read about here in this story as they all gather together there with the apostle. And as they gather together, Paul, he really sort of speaks his heart to them, knowing that he's not going to ever be with them again. He's going to remind them of his ministry among them, and then he's going to really sort of give them instruction so that they can be assured that they're going to make it without him in the future. And in the remainder of the 20th chapter here, from verse 18, that is what Paul does. And this is one of my favorite portions of Scripture. There are so many things that Paul said here that are just the kind of things that really, you know, just hit deeply and leave a great impression. And therefore, we'll wait and we'll pick up next week in verse 18 and we'll go through these very touching words. Much like Paul's final epistle to Timothy, these are his final words to these people that he loves so much in Ephesus that he knew he'd never see again. But he imparts to them real vital truth that will take them on into the future. And so in our next study, we'll look at that together. But as we close, one final thought. And it really is just sort of going back to what we talked about earlier. I want to just emphasize again, God's call, God's plan. He has it all laid out for each and every one of us. And the important thing in life is just to get in that groove of what God has for us. Because that's where life really happens. As we've said before, that's where the adventure is. That's where the excitement is. And it's a matter of just discovering and knowing that. You know, because life can be rough sometimes. It can get hard. It can be difficult. It can even become monotonous to some degree. But if we just keep focused on this fact that, you know, I'm doing what God has called me to do. I'm doing what God has created me to do. Then that makes everything else just, you know, it just makes it all fit together the way it ought to. And so, are you in the call of God? Are you seeking the call of God? Are you asking God to direct your life? Do you realize that it's not just coming to church? It's great that you're here, but there's so much more to it than this. And I think, sadly, there are people who are content to just come to church and to get that hour in or that 2 hours or something like that a week. You know, okay, I went to church, I did my religious duty for the week, and then I'm back out living my life and doing my thing. But if that's the case, you are missing out on the most glorious life possible, the life that God has prepared for you, a life right smack in the center of his will. So don't be content with anything less than that. Because if you are, you're just living so far below what God actually has for you. But realize God has a plan. He has a purpose. He has things that he wants to work into your life. He has things that he wants to accomplish in your life and through your life. And when we're living that way, that's what Jesus was talking about when he spoke of abundant life. He said, I've come to give men life and that more abundantly. That's what he's talking about, the life that's in the center of God's plan. So get in the center of God's plan. And enjoy that abundant life that the Lord has for you. And remember, it's not just about coming to church. It's about living each day for the Lord and finding that call and that purpose that He has for you, that's when it's a thrill. And that's what it ought to be. That's what God wants it to be.
We'll continue with more of our study through the book of Acts in our next lesson as we discover that Paul is not a man that is easily moved by the afflictions that come with following the will of God. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Living in the Call of God. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT3135. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts and vodcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.